So as we said, Jennifer is going to be speaking on step 12, which is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So Jennifer, I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Now I know why they're only talking to you, because you're the only person they can see. Not that you aren't popular, because you are. You look good. You feeling better? It's Terry.
Yeah, I think we can get more people to show up.
No, it's okay. I'm good. I'm good. You and I are the only women here. I'm Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic. If you haven't been here before, my sobriety date is May 4th, 1991. I have a sponsor. I've always had a sponsor since the first 2 weeks I was here. She has a spiritual guide, and if you don't have a sponsor, I highly recommend them. They're free. You can really have as many as you want, I think. No? Okay, Jim said no. Yeah.
Jennifer?
Terry.
We can always see your mouth. Can you adjust it so we can see you better?
I don't want to, like, it's all balanced here. So, all right, okay. My home group is the Friday night God Calling meeting, which will start tomorrow night to be a Zoom meeting. If you go to the website, the AA website, you can find the meeting ID and the passcode to get into that meeting. It is a prayer and meditation meeting, so there will be 5 minutes of silent prayer and meditation, followed by a discussion about the 11th step on some facet, the 11th step. So this is my last night here doing this, and wow. First, I want to thank a couple people. I want to thank my gal Jessie, who told me, who finally told me, like somewhere between steps 5 and 6 of my doing this, that she was the one who told Kevin to call me. I think that was a brave confession on her part, and I'm very grateful to her, because this has been an incredible adventure. My greatest thanks to Kevin and to the home group members. It's just been a joy being here with you all the last couple months, actually. You've been so hospitable. We've become friends. I will come back. This experience of going through the steps, revisiting each of the steps, one or two at a time, for me after all these years, has been challenging. It's been illuminating. I learned things that I didn't know about me, about the steps, about this journey. And it's been a gift to be able to share my small insight and my experience in them. I think this is an incredibly valuable meeting for Erie AA. I wish many more people were here. I think this is, you know, I've talked about this before. Bill and Bob said the meetings were for the discussion of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have plenty of time for fellowship and socializing afterwards and before, but many meetings, you know, really don't focus on that, and this one does, and it's so important that we learn about these steps and the traditions. So tonight, step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. If I can do this all in 20 minutes, that'll be a miracle. So get your questions ready, because Terry's already laughing because she knows. I'm going to break this down into three parts, because I think it has three distinct parts. So part one being having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Page 567 of the Big Book tells us what a spiritual awakening is. It's a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. For me, this was a process. That's why it happens on the 12th step. That's why the spiritual awakening becomes apparent. But with each step that I did, with each prayer that I said, with each day that I didn't pick up a drink, I changed. I started to grow. The steps are a faith-building process. So by step 12, I had had a personality change sufficient to overcome alcoholism so far. Also, by the time I arrived at step 12, I understood on a very deep level that this program is about much more than stopping drinking. The book says the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. And it was for me a realization when I got to step 12, and this is so important, you know, and I watch for this with women I'm working with and young people. It's so important to realize what the real meaning of being here is. That realization that through my higher power, I could save other alcoholics from going through the alcoholic nightmare that we all went through, or at least get them out of it and on a different path, just the same way as you and your higher power did for me. That's what this is about. You know, it's nice to, you know, that I don't drink anymore. I feel so much better. But that's why I'm here. That's why I'm on the planet, to carry a message of hope to people that have none. Because I was those people when I came here. So at step 12, having had a spiritual awakening, I became aware that this was going to be a life of service. And that is the great joy for me. The service that I do in Alcoholics Anonymous and in the world. I have to talk about a woman who spoke at our conference years ago, Lorna Kelly. She was she worked with Mother Teresa. Is it Saint Teresa now? Yeah. She worked with Mother Teresa in India, and she discovered in working with Mother that Mother Teresa could help the indigent and the sick. She could help the poor and the homeless. She couldn't help alcoholics. She just didn't understand us the way we understand each other. And Mother Teresa called this ability that we have, one alcoholic to another, to lift each other out of this horrible disease and into a better life, our precious gift. And she told Lorna, hang on to your precious gift. So I feel blessed, you know. But this does not mean that I don't have a very rich and abundant life in the world. I have a wonderful family, a beautiful son. I have a cool business that I like a lot, that's a lot of fun. Not highly profitable, but lots of fun. I have wonderful, wonderful friends. I'm looking at one right now, like she's looking back. She's the other woman at the meeting. I have a social life. I have as much of a social life as I want, actually. You know, we keep each other as busy as we want to be. And I just have a lot of great friends and a lot of creativity and joy in my life today. But Jim Nelson, my spiritual guide, one of my spiritual guides, taught me one main lesson that I think is really important. He told me, no matter what, never ever forget your primary purpose. And I have to tell you that on the best days of my sobriety these last 30 plus years, and on the very worst days, the most difficult days, the ones I thought that I would never get through, and I had a few of those, I never forgot my primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics. So we carried this message. And that's the next part of the step. We tried to carry this message to alcoholics. Okay, this message. What's this message? The 12 steps will guide you to a spiritual awakening sufficient to overcome alcoholism. That's the message. We carry this message to alcoholics. Ever tried to carry this message to a non-alcoholic? They don't care. I mean, some of them like appreciate the 12 steps. Some of them are interested in them, and some of them want to use them. But by and large, even though the big book says that the 12 steps can benefit anyone, most of them, most non-alcoholics are not interested, or they won't work. Or they are people who have addictions that we don't speak to in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so we can refer them to some place, you know, where they can get the help that, you know, that they need. But the average Joe, who is not an alcoholic, is not interested in this 12 steps of recovery because they don't have the gift of desperation that we had, that I had. I needed to do something different. I needed a new life. I needed a way out, and you gave me this. You gave me this way out. Carrying this message to alcoholics is lots of action. It's a lifetime of action. It has been, right from, you know, the first year I was sober. There's, in the big book on page, starting on page 89, there's a full chapter called Working with Others, devoted to step 12, that talks in a lot of detail about how to carry the message to other alcoholics. It's very specific, has little helpful hints like see your man alone. That means he's supposed to be alone, not you. I was taught that I should not go on 12-step calls alone. I should take another alcoholic with me. I had Julia R. was the first one to teach me that. She set up a scenario of sitting across the coffee table from a gal with a whiskey sour in her hand and how easy it is to get lulled into that place again. So we always take another recovering drunk with us. The big book says to tell the new person your story. My story's all I really have to offer. The 12 steps are really all I have to teach. And then we outline the program of action, which are the steps. If she's not interested, and I've had lots of those, we're in here, can I have your phone number? I will never call you. just, I let them go, and with good feelings, and look for somebody who's willing to come along, you know? There are lots and lots of types of 12-step works. The book on page 97 says, helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day if need be. Now, it may mean the loss of night's sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money and your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she's neglected. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he's violent. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally you will have to meet such conditions. I highlighted all of those that I've had experience with. And there's a lot of highlighting here. Because the first time I read it was like, whoa, I'm not going to do all that stuff. But it happens. It just happens. And back in the day, early in my sobriety, we used to do a lot more 12-step calls. You know, hit the ground running. Somebody calls. They're in a desperate state. Sometimes they've overdosed. Sometimes they're just terrified and they want to get help right away. And I'll give you just one example. I had a call, a 12-step call, young in sobriety. I was maybe a couple years sober. Marge F. and I, those, you probably remember her, Jim, went to the call. The gal was having grand mal seizures. And she was drinking a 7 and 7 at the same, in between the seizures. And, hi, welcome. And we called an ambulance, and the paramedics came, and she told them they would have to wait till she finished her drink. And they did. She continued to have seizures, finally finished the drink, got, you know, the paramedics got her in the ambulance, and she lived through that experience. She did not live through the next one, though. But we used to do that with some frequency. That's the way that we help people. They didn't immediately get sent to detoxes or rehabs, or, you know, we were on the ground a lot. I don't know if people are doing those kind of 12-step calls often anymore. I know I'm not, but I would. And but there's a lot, lots of types of 12-step work, and you're probably all doing plenty of it. If just sitting here tonight is 12-step work. Just being a part of this group is being the message. A couple of things I did was I worked the AA hotline for some years. I used to do women's prison meetings with Judy S. I did them with Julia R. Visited the detox regularly. I remember one Christmas Eve, 7 months pregnant, going to the detox on Christmas Eve with my husband, who's also a member, and my grandmother and the family going, "Why are you going out on, you know, snowing?" And, you know, so that was Ian's first visit to detox. but that's, you know, that's what we did. We were young in sobriety. We had a lot of energy. We were carrying a message of hope. Been to women's recovery houses. I now sponsor a woman who owns a women's recovery house. That's pretty exciting. And I like to visit there and go to meetings there sometimes. I have talked in schools in the Erie County area, and of course tell my story in meetings like this in Leeds. I sponsor women in recovery. I've sponsored lots and lots of women over the years. Some stay, some go with somebody else, some just go. Some have died. But sponsorship is a great gift, you know. It's a huge gift of this program. These sponsorship relationships are sacred. I believe that. I chaired meetings, and I've been a secretary and a treasurer, and those are very important jobs. I've even started up a few meetings, but honestly, you know, just showing up is the most important thing. You know, just showing up, continuing to show up. I went to a meeting last night I didn't plan to go to. I kind of thought I might want to because I was going to be here tonight, and I just wanted to sit one out and listen. And I saw my second sponsor, who I hadn't seen in years. And it was so important to be there. And she's the one who taught me that the meeting that you miss might be the one that has the message you need to hear. So that was lovely. And then there's the entire realm of AA service jobs. The Central Committee, the special events like the Spring Conference Committee. These are all the ways that we keep AA alive. And if we don't keep AA alive, we don't keep us alive. So, you know, these are the things we do that are part of our new lives. Okay, let's go to part three and practice these principles in all our affairs. It's easy to be nice to you. You send me presents. And it's easy to be wonderful for an hour. But what the 12-step acts is that we practice these principles in all our affairs. That means at work. It means in social situations. It means at the grocery store. And most importantly, it means in my own home with my family. Because that's the hardest, you know. Want to let the guard down, grumpy in the morning, you know, tired in the evening. Kind of can get snotty sometimes. But I have to remember, if, you know, if I can be wonderful for this hour, I can be wonderful maybe for that hour too. Love and tolerance is our code. After all, how do I treat the clerk in the store? How do I treat the waiter in the restaurant? My drunken neighbors, how do I treat them? I do have drunken neighbors, I'm not making that up. And you can ask Ian, I get along with them okay. Love and tolerance is our code. So I do okay most of the time. And I am reminded sometimes by my son that I may be the only big book that somebody will ever see. I am the message. My life is an example of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, it's like a big responsibility, huh? Yeah. I have some weak areas. Everybody does. Terry, I'm not going to say anything about the driving thing at all. I'm not going to tell them. Oh, never mind. I really don't have much tolerance for people who hurt other people with malice, and certainly I don't have much tolerance for people who abuse animals, but they're sick people, and I pray for them. I was going to say that one of my weak areas was that I am politically active, but my husband stopped me, and he said, that is not a weak area. We get healthy so that we can be a part of the world again, so that we can create better situations. So I really meditated on that, and I think that he's right, because I am active, and the things I'm active about are grounded in the principles that we just talked about. Love, tolerance, equality, honesty, compassion. Not everybody agrees with me. I pray for them too, just more loudly and with signs sometimes, even a bullhorn once. So that. Still, I am who I am today. I am no longer a people pleaser. I'm not a chameleon. I don't change for every situation I'm in to please other people or to adapt to a situation that I don't feel comfortable showing up to as me. I'm not a lost soul anymore, and I'm not a phony. I am an integrated human being now, and that is through those steps. I have found doing the steps and found once again in a brand new way on a higher level, thanks to you, that who I am is good enough, and that it always was, and that not knowing that simple truth is what kept me sick. So I want to thank you for that, and thank God. And that's it.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Terry has a question.
So okay.
Yes. Oh, great! Good, good, good.
No, thank you. They're all clapping. And if they have a question, they should be able to hear them if they ask a question.
Okay.
But I'd like to know that someone wants to ask a question.
Okay.
Anybody
okay.
Want to ask a question now? Oh, yes, not yet. Okay.
Thanks, Terry.
So does anybody in the room have a question?
Hi, I'm Patrick. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Patrick.
Thanks, Jennifer. With regard to practicing these principles in all our affairs, let's say you have a job or a profession that requires you to advance somebody else's agenda. Ooh. That is, like, hypothetically, let's say you're like a divorce attorney.
Okay.
And you get paid to advance somebody else's agenda. That is your role in life. And very frequently, that person's agenda runs contrary to many, if not all, of these principles. But I have to do, or this hypothetical divorce attorney has to do it. How would you suggest I reconcile that at the end of the day?
You know, I can only tell you my experience. And I've never had experience as a divorce attorney, or any other kind of attorney for that sake. But I did work in television for a while. And I was a creative director for the ABC affiliate in Erie. And I've worked with a lot of really nice people in a really cutthroat business. And yeah, I did that for about 5 or 6 years in that job, and I found that it just wasn't working for me. It really wasn't. And I talked to a counselor about it, and he said, you know, that job, that's those circumstances, that bottom line mentality is against your nature. And I left that job because, and I don't work in that business anymore, although I think, you know, 30 some years later that I probably would be okay. But it was requiring that I compromise so much that there were other things I could do. You know, there were other things I could do. I worked freelance for a long time. I could take the jobs that, I'm a writer for media. I could take the jobs that I was comfortable with. I did a whole package for Hammett's Home Health Care and things like that. That were more in line with really who I am. So I guess choices, you know, what your nature allows, what you're comfortable with. Of course, you know, we have to live and let live too. We have to allow for other people not to be identical in their beliefs with us. But yeah, if it gets too far away from love and tolerance, I'm not that comfortable with it. Does that help? Okay. It's a really good question.
After I close it or something.
Who else has a question?
The guys are quiet tonight.
Oh, there we go.
The other lawyer.
Hi, Jennifer, Jack Alcoholic. Thanks so much. It's been great having you here.
Oh,
just
you.
Terrific. So my question is, what sorts of things do you do with the girls you're working with to encourage them to practice the 12th step in terms of sponsorship and things like that? I mean, I heard a woman speak about before she agrees to sponsor someone, she makes them promise that they'll do certain things, and one of them is that once they've done the steps that they'll also sponsor. I wonder how you handle that issue, because some people are a little reluctant maybe to sponsor.
Thanks, Jack. The women I'm sponsoring right now are all sober some time and really very, very busy with 12-step work. You know, they do a lot of sponsoring. They're very involved. You know, like Gretchen, who was here last week, you know, was one of the women I sponsored. Jesse, who got me up here, you know, does a lot of sponsorship. I don't really teach them what to do with the women they sponsor with the 12th step. I just teach them what I, you know, the 12th step. And then if they've done the previous 11 steps, it just takes over. It becomes a way of life. I have to say that some of the women that I sponsor right now are some of the most generous, selfless people that I know. They do service that nobody ever knows about. If I say too much, I'll tell on them and then everybody will know about it. But doing really wonderful work. Sorry, Chair. I knew that might happen. You're balanced here. So I really don't have to teach them what to do with the women they sponsor. They know. New women, I mean, I always ask if they agree to do the 12 steps, to work the 12 steps, to go through them, because I don't have anything else to teach them. That's how I got sober. That's how I stay sober. That's my way of life. So that is a prerequisite. If I'm sponsoring somebody, and I did have someone ask me to sponsor her recently, who was really not interested. You know, she had all kinds of, you know, things ahead of doing the recovery program, and we couldn't really make any progress. We, you know, so we didn't. And, you know, hopefully she's moved on and finds her way. But if she changes her mind, wants to do the steps, I'm here.
Hey, Jennifer. Eric.
Hey,
alcoholic.
Eric.
Thank you for everything. Kind of piggybacking off of Patrick over there with hypotheticals. So, like, recently I've been trying to be more conscious of, like, situations that God may put in front of me. Because I've been reading a lot, like, hey, if you ask for something, God's not going to give it to you. He might put you in a situation that you can attain what you were asking for. But I still kind of fall back. Like, hypothetically, somebody might have been, like, off the road in the snow. And, like, I saw somebody else there, or somebody else, hypothetically, was there. So I was late for an appointment. I drove by, and I felt a little guilty about not stopping to do things. So am I, like, oversensitive, or do you think, like, do you believe that God puts certain situations like that in front of you to see how you react, and then, like, am I supposed to ask for forgiveness after, or should I feel that guilt of not doing all I could in that situation after I asked to be placed in those situations? Or am I just doing what I always do and overthink the shit out of everything?
Yeah, and no, you know, it's okay to observe your choices, you know. I think we do need to observe our choices in those situations. Somebody's already there, hypothetically, helping somebody out of the hypothetical store. And you are late for an appointment. You also have to realize that there's somebody waiting for you at the appointment who you could be inconveniencing if you stop. Now, if the person is in trouble and you don't stop and there's no one there helping them, you might want to look at that a little bit. But yeah, guilt really has absolutely no value whatsoever. And yes, I do think that our higher power brings to us situations in our lives, you know, or allows us to be a part of situations which will teach us about us, you know. I think it was Beverly that taught me that. You know, God puts people in our lives to teach us about us. And so we are able to observe, you know, our own behavior and make decisions about changing it if we want to. You know, that's a serenity prayer. Maybe the next time you will stop. Maybe you won't be late. I don't know, you know. That's your journey. But guilt, no. And we're not being tested here. This isn't like there's no big report card thing. But
really,
that's my
really
opinion.
More like, oh, I missed an opportunity.
Well, there's that. There's that. Yeah. And then, but you don't need to feel bad about it. You just take the next opportunity.
I was waiting for Jennifer to say, that was me in the day.
Well, I actually went, yeah, I did. And like two really nice guys helped me. So.
Who else has a question for Jennifer?
Always. It's not Dave Jim, doesn't
know that one. Not bad. Not bad.
Hi, Jim.
Alcoholic. I came here to get a certificate. You guys don't have birthdays?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Can I have a sandwich? You get a card in the mail.
Oh, okay. No, what I wanted to ask, I think with the 12 step, the most important thing for me anyways, and I don't know if you agree, is you learn how to listen. And it brings you back to where you came from. And that's so important because my sponsor used to tell me, you know, sobriety is like a toothache. You can think about it, but you can't really feel it. You know, you reminisce about it, but you don't really feel the intensity of that pain like when you were out drinking. And then when you go on 12-step calls, when you're up on a porch or when you're going to the house and you're talking to somebody and you look at them and you go, oh my God, I was just like that, you know. You know, belligerent and trying to build yourself up to be something that you're not, you know, the false thing you did. And you see the other half standing there in total fear, which I remember doing that to people, and I would get these moments of clarity where seeing people were so afraid, and I never wanted to be the cause. I never wanted to hurt anyone when I was drinking, but evidently, you know, looking back on it, you say, yeah, I did. But I think it's important that we talk about listening. Mm-hmm. You know, when I came into AA, somebody came up to me and said, how are you? And then they sat down and we started talking. When I was in a bar and I started talking, I had to talk louder and louder and louder because nobody was listening. You know, nobody gave any care about you. When you come in AA, they sit down and say, hey, what's up? You know, and then they talk to you. I love that more than anything about this fellowship. I don't know if you've had any experiences like that, if you could.
With listening? That's why I came to the meeting last night, because I knew I'd be coming here tonight and talking a lot. And I wanted to just go there first last night and just listen, just spend the whole hour just listening, which is what I did, and it was wonderful. And listening to the new people is really important, because that's how we find out how we can help them, you know, where they're at. We need to know where they are, what they're feeling, what they're thinking, where they've been, what, you know, we can relate of our experience with them. So we have to listen. I wasn't a great listener before I got here. I know that shocks you. But but I learned. My first sponsor, Anne, I love Anne, she would tell me these long, winding stories about her first experiences in sobriety when she got sober in California. And they would go on for 20 minutes. And there was no interrupting her, because she was in the middle of teaching me about her story. And I heard the same stories 20 minutes long 2 days later. And that was her teaching me to listen. So I'm better at it than I was. But still, that's always an area I can do better on. Thanks, Jim.
Who else has a question for Jennifer? Anyone on Zoom? Is Terry still moderating for us?
She is, but she has no questions.
Nothing. Anyone here in the room have a question? Oh, I see Kevin's hand.
Yeah, you got plenty of time, Kevin.
Thanks, Jennifer. Thanks for coming out and being here for all 10 weeks. I know it's always a big ask, and when everybody's done, they really, really appreciate it. So anybody who's listening and has over 30 years of sobriety, get my number. Anyway, I know through this whole process, you know, you've gone through your own growth and things like this. And when we get to the 12th step and it says, you know, practice these principles in all our affairs, I know when I first came in, you know, they read the promises, they did all these things, and my response was, yeah, you know, it's maybe for you, but not for me. But, you know, with your experience over 3 decades, and you look at this 12th step and you say, you know, we practice these principles in all our affairs, what are you the most grateful for yourself of realizing your character assets, your defects, and being able to take these assets that you have to the world, like you said, your political ambitions or whatever? What are you the most proud of, that the gift that's been given to you that you realize?
It really is seeing seeing people that I work with recover, seeing them live, you know, and blossom and grow and have lives again and take care of their children again. You know, for women, that's a big one. Or heal relationships or end relationships that are not healthy, and move on. You know, have careers, go to college, have healthy relationships, you know, marriages or whatever, you know, seeing that happen and being able to be happy for them and celebrate them. Because when I was drinking, I didn't celebrate other people. I was jealous of other people. I wanted what they had. I had no intention of doing what they did to get it. I was bitter. Today, the good fortune of a friend is a blessing in my life. It truly is. And it's joyful for me to see my friends and everyone do well in this program. New people come in. You know, we've had some losses in this program recently. We've lost people, and I've lost people over the years that I was working with, in really sad and violent, you know, circumstances. And that diminishes us, I think. So we need to celebrate each other. We need to celebrate 44 years. We need to celebrate 3 years. We need to celebrate showing up here tonight. We need to celebrate a happy family for our best friend. We need to do that. And for me, that's the biggest gift, is being able to find joy in you being happy as well as.
Thank you very much, and thanks for coming and doing this on behalf of the group. I think it was a wonderful 10 weeks. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
Any other questions? Last chance.
Last chance, dear. Got anything
to say? Oh, yeah. Well, we've got something special for you, Jim.
Oh, my God. This is an embarrassment of riches here. Oh, you guys.
This is for you.
Thank you. Oh.
We have a special coin for you as well.
Oh, my gosh. Look at this, Terry. You guys see this? Ladies? Gentlemen? Isn't that beautiful? Terry says awesome. And it is. Thank you so much. It's really been a gift. Thank you. No, I don't. There's some things I don't tolerate real well. I'm going to put this in my pocket so I don't lose it. Thank you, gals, for being here.